In 1920, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution took effect. On this week's News and Views, we look at Prohibition, now the subject of an exhibition at the National Constitution Center. By the mid-1800s, America had an alcohol problem, fueled by a saloon culture that catered to men. Excessive drinking drained household income and led to abusive behavior at home, among other problems. The Constitution Center's VP of Exhibitions, Stephanie Ryer, says in response, the Women's Christian Temperance Union formed in 1873 and worked in tandem with the movement to get women the right to vote.
They really thought that they would improve society and increase morality by getting rid of drink.
Anti-alcohol sentiment eventually united a variety of disparate groups, says Daniel Okrent, exhibition curator and author of Last Call, The Rise and Fall of Prohibition. The Anti-Saloon League, formed in 1893, was led by Baptist and Methodist ministers.
They brought in allies that ranged from the Women's Christian Temperance Union to the suffrage movement to the Ku Klux Klan, who saw prohibition as a vehicle that could be used against the ethnic political machines of the major cities of the Northeast, the Progressive Party, and at the far left, the industrial workers of the world, because they believed that alcohol was a tool used by the plutocrats to keep the working class down.
The 18th Amendment was ratified by the requisite 36 of the 48 states in 1919 and took effect in 1920. It prohibited not drinking, but the manufacture, sale, and transportation of intoxicating liquors. In legislation, Congress spelled out exceptions for, among other things, sacramental wine and alcohol for medicinal purposes. On the next News and Views, Unintended Consequences. You can hear this entire three-part series online at WRTI.org. I'm Susan Lewis. WRTI News. Prohibition under the 18th Amendment took effect in 1920. On this week's News and Views, as the era is examined in an exhibition at the National Constitution Center, we look at some of Prohibition's unintended consequences. Although general consumption of alcohol decreased, Prohibition didn't successfully do away with all drinking establishments, but it changed the way they did business. Saloons, which had served only male customers, gave way to illegal speakeasies, where men and women drank together, listened to music, and danced.
Thus begins the American nightclub, the cabaret, the spread of jazz.
Exhibition curator Daniel Okrent.
Many other habits changed. The rise of the mixed drink. The quality of the liquor available in the speakeasies was so horrible that people wanted to disguise the taste. So here comes the screwdriver. Fill it up with orange juice or gin and tonic.
American ingenuity was hard at work with both legal and illegal products. Constitution Center VP of Exhibitions, Stephanie Ryer, points to an object on display, a perfectly legal grape brick.
So you're supposed to add water to make grape juice, but very specifically, it had instructions that warned not to add yeast or sugar or leave it in a dark place too long because it would ferment and turn into wine, which we all know is illegal.
Prohibition also spurred the growth of a national crime syndicate as local gangs created alliances to facilitate the movement of large quantities of alcohol. On the next News and Views, Prohibition's repeal and lasting legacy. You can hear this entire three-part series online at WRTI.org. I'm Susan Lewis, WRTI News. Between 1920 and 1933, federal law prohibited the manufacture, sale, and transportation of intoxicating liquors. On this week's News and Views, we consider Prohibition's history and legacy. With the abuse of exceptions to the law and the proliferation of illegal speakeasies, drinking continued during Prohibition. Organized crime increased, and the idea of repeal gained public support. But it was the Great Depression which brought an end to Prohibition, says Dan Okrent, curator of an exhibition at the National Constitution Center.
People lose jobs. Unemployment gets to 25%. Federal tax revenues disintegrate. The income tax collections go down by about 30%, and there are no capital gains collections at all because nobody has a capital gain during the Depression. The government is running on fumes. So people said, I know where we can get some money. We can bring back liquor and the liquor tax.
With the 21st Amendment in 1933, the repeal of Prohibition also put tens of thousands back into the legitimate workforce as breweries and distilleries, truck companies and glass factories, among others, reopened for business. Constitution Center Vice President of Exhibitions Stephanie Ryer says the story of prohibition still informs our national conversation.
It actually addresses a lot of the questions and a lot of the debates that we're having today. What role does government play in the personal lives of Americans?
American Spirits, The Rise and Fall of Prohibition is at the National Constitution Center through April 28th of next year. You can hear this entire three-part series online at WRTI.org. I'm Susan Lewis, WRTI News.